I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
It's good to be with you.
After offices, I think you said that you prefer industrial property over retail.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, look, let's say you have a warehouse property of around 1,500 square metres in size, and your tenant leaves at the end of the lease. It's a tough market, and your letting agent has simply run out of ideas for finding a replacement tenant. What can or should you do in this situation?
Yeah, Ken, I guess that sort of situation is a concern, and it's a fear that most investors have, is that their tenant will leave at the end of a lease, or the worst case scenario, for whatever reason, the business goes bad and you've got the property back on your hands when you don't really need any of that angst. And before we get into the specifics of the question you've asked, let's step back a bit. And I think you know me pretty well, that most of what I do is to find out how something works and then repackage it together, and so that I distill everything down into a working blueprint so that I can have an easy helicopter view of what's going on. So what I think we need to look at first is, what are your various marketing choices? And what I can do, Ken, is I'll put together a little chart which I'll give you, and we can have it underneath this podcast so that people can download it and view it while we're talking and they're listening to what we're saying. But in simple terms, you need to look at your marketing choices as a quadrant. In other words, a square divided into two rows and two columns. So you end up with four squares. Now, on the vertical axis, we're looking at cost of your marketing. And on the horizontal axis, we're looking at the marketplace itself. So as far as cost is concerned, your top line relates to the paid advertising or marketing that you do, and the bottom line refers to free advertising or marketing. So when we come to the marketplace, your first column relates to the invisible market, the ones that you can't readily determine. And the second column relates to your visible market, where you can actually identify pretty readily who those parties are, either by name or by characteristics that can help you to directly target them. And so if we look at it in those quadrants, the top left-hand quadrant is where most real estate agents work. And you cover things like media ads, the web portals like commercialproperty.com.au or Real Commercial or things like that, and also for lease signs. Now, they're the traditional ones. So what they're doing is they're paid advertising and they're tackling the world at large. In other words, the invisible marketplace, because they can't readily tell you who they're going to reach. Sure, some newspapers can give you broad demographic profiles and income status, but relatively, it's an anonymous market that they're tackling. And then if you move to the lower level, the free invisible one, are what you call organic traffic to the website that they may have for their company. And if they've got properties advertised on their website, yes, that will, over time, as they get higher rankings in the search engines, they'll get organic traffic, and therefore that's what you call free traffic or free marketing to an invisible audience, because again, you don't really know who they are. And what I like to concentrate on is the visible audience, and that's your right-hand column. Now, as far as the paid marketing is, you can do direct letterbox drops. Now, what we're talking about here is you go to Australia Post and you can define postcodes based upon where your target market might be. So if you're in an industrial area, using your example, there are others around in that area, and it might be the postcode you're in and a couple of adjoining postcodes. And because it is a direct mail piece, you can target it. I'm going from memory now, but instead of being 60 cents a pop, it comes down to around about 25 cents, maybe 30, but I think it's in that order. It might even be a bit less than that. But what it means is that you are reaching businesses in the area, location that you know would be interested in making a move, or could be interested in making a move. So you are directly targeting a specific niche rather than having a scattergun approach and just spending money on media ads and so forth. So that's number one. Now, the second one is web ads or web advertisements. And we're talking about Google AdWords or Facebook ads. And you see, most people don't realize you can actually target them quite finely. And for example, on Facebook ads, you can design an ad that only goes or is only be seen by right down to a postcode or an age group or an income group or whatever it is. There are so many ways that you can define them down so that those ads only appear to your target market. So again, to a degree, we don't know exactly who they are, but we know and we can define them and create the niche that we want to market to. So the audience, in other words, we can define the audience that you want to reach relative to the property involved. And then the bottom one is what we call free and visible. And this is where we talk about email flyers, which again, agents will use and just pepper their database. But the one I prefer is making direct phone calls, because that way you are engaging the person one-on-one and you can obviously make a much better impression and progress the discussions a lot better if you are talking to them in that manner. So those are the ways that I look at the marketing choices that you've got, and hopefully that creates a clearer picture.
That's really quite fascinating. You've just categorized the various forms of marketing in a manner which I imagine most people would never have thought about before. However, it's rather useful, and as it gives you a clear grasp on your available options. While we don't have time now to explore all the intricacies of Google AdWords and Facebook advertising, you might care to walk us through how making phone calls would work. Where do you make a start on that?
Yeah, look, I understand what you're asking, and it's not that difficult. And you just have to think laterally. I mean, quite often, simply by getting out the yellow pages and going to the local chamber of commerce, you can get a list of industries or people in the area. The internet is another one. But also just hopping in the car and driving around, and particularly if your list is going to be like 30 or 40 businesses around, and bear in mind if it's industrial property, they're generally pretty large or larger areas, and therefore in a given area there may only be 30, 40, 50, maybe 60 at the most. But maybe put one of your kids in the car and just drive around and make a note of the address and the name of the party. And yes, you might have to look them up. Sometimes they have advertising on the outside, they've got a phone number there. So you just need to, one way or another, cobble together a list of anyone or any firm nearby that could possibly be interested in your space.
Okay, so now you have a list of potential targets, for want of a better word. However, most people would be cringing at the thought of having to make a cold call. How do you overcome that hesitancy?
Yeah, you're right. Most people hate making cold calls. Even agents who are supposed to be professional don't like doing it. And there's basically three reasons. One, they don't know what to say. Two, there's that fear of rejection. And three, there's that concern that they might end up damaging their personal image if the people do reject them. And so you've got to work out a way to overcome that. And the only reason you might feel rejected is if the people at the other end know who it is that's calling, because you've had to identify who you are and what you're calling about. Now, you might say, well, how do you get around that? Well, it was interesting, just without taking too much time, back in the early 1980s, my firm was appointed to lease the World Trade Center in Melbourne. And it was, you know, a pretty large development. It was some 80-odd thousand square meters. Now, the rule was back then that unless a business had 50% of its activity involved in overseas trade, it couldn't be a tenant within the World Trade Center. That was a global requirement. And everyone was saying, oh, look, that means your market's just shrunk. You just can't approach anyone. It's dropped down to 5% of the available tenants. But when you sat down and think about it, they make lists of those people. And we worked out that there were 10 different categories of potential occupiers. I won't go through them all, but you've got importers, you've got exporters, you've got freight forwarders, shipping companies, customs agents, and the list goes on. So there's 10 categories. And because it's a very tightly defined group, you can actually get the names, address, phone numbers of all those people. So all we had to do now was to approach them and work out a way to do it. And I remember we came up with this simple system. And you've got to understand, when someone gets a phone call, they have their mind on something else. They're working on something to do with the business, or it might be a personal matter that's consuming them at the time, but they're distracted. And your phone call is a nuisance. So you have to do what's technically called pattern interrupt. In other words, you have to say or do something that captures their attention, and so that you have their 100% undivided focus. So the question you would ask here in this case is, as soon as they answer the phone, you don't tell them who you are or what you're calling about. You simply say to them, have you signed the lease on your new warehouse yet? Now, think about it. If they have no interest, they're going to say, I'm not interested in moving. Why are you calling me? Say, I'm sorry, I must have got the wrong information. I'm sorry to have bothered you, and hang up. So that takes fully 5, maybe 10 seconds. There's no rejection because they don't know who you are. You haven't explained anything. And extraordinarily, what we find is that particularly if someone is contemplating either immediately or in the next 6 months, the response suddenly becomes, how did you know we were looking? So then you know you have their attention. And that's the secret, is to be able to immediately, within the first 5 to 10 seconds, work out whether they are real or not real. Because you can imagine how many phone calls you can make until you get one. If they're only 10-second phone calls, instead of this laborious thing where you only make 5 calls in half an hour because you've got to explain what it is and you go on and then they get bored and in the end they get annoyed and they start abusing you. And that's what causes the angst with people with making these calls. So that's the secret, is you go through like that. Now, as soon as you have their attention and they say, how did you know that we were thinking of moving? So that's part of my job. If you're doing it yourself, you say, I'm an investor and I need to keep tabs on who's doing what. Or if you have your agent doing it, they can simply say, you know, again, that's our job. We need to keep a list and up to date on what movements are happening in the marketplace. So your next question is, do you mind me asking how much space that you occupy? Now, if they say 1,000 metres, well, you'd respond with something like, look, we're just looking to expand because we have this warehouse close to you for 1,500 square metres. But if they say they've got 2,000 square metres, then you ask if they would like to downsize, because sometimes businesses are contracting. They might have lost a client, and that's the reason they're moving, because it was a major client and they can't occupy the amount of space their lease is falling due. So either way, you can turn the conversation to that. But they're now interested to hear what you have to say. And that's the secret, that you control the conversation and thereby do not have to expose yourself to that rejection and concern about them feeling badly about you or thinking badly about you because of you've been a nuisance and interrupting their day.
So, once you've identified a potential tenant, what's the next step?
Well, the next step is you've got to understand that even though you may have spoken to the managing director or the CEO of the company, the tenant, more likely you would have spoken to the warehouse manager, but it will be the warehouse manager that comes down to inspect it initially. So you need to make sure that you spend enough money tricking it up so that it looks presentable when he walks in, particularly into his office. You might have to spend a bit of money in re-carpeting that, repainting it, making sure any of the infrastructure that's involved there is the very latest. So instead of trying to spend money on the whole property, spend money on the things that are going to be important to him or her, because they're the ones you have to please. They're the ones that are going to spend day in, day out in that location. They're the ones that are going to be your best salesperson when they go back and see their boss as to whether or not your property is suitable. So the secret really is to spend the money on presentation to present the best possible picture to the person that is actually the decision maker. And most people make the mistake of assuming that is the CEO. And I've got to tell you, in all my experience, it generally is not. The CEO is more interested in the bottom line, and in many cases, the CEO is spending time outside of the property rather than inside the property. And so long as geographically it fits and suits where he lives or close by to that, or doesn't alter make it difficult relative to where he is now, he will more than happy, if the numbers add up and the property keeps his warehouse manager happy, he will go along with it. So that really is the secret to appealing to understanding the psychology and the psyche of the person that makes the business tick. And if you can do that, then you're home and hosed. So really, it all comes down to identifying quickly whether or not they're in or they're out, which is, as I said, is 5 or 10 second conversation. If you know they are, work them through to understanding whether they're upgrading or downgrading, and then set up a time for them to come through. Now, if you may do this yourself if you find you've lost confidence in the agent, but there's no reason why, and it may be that you have to find the list of names and discuss the strategy with your managing agent to go through it, but there's no reason why you can't implement that, and you'll find this far more productive than spending money on ads and very expensive campaigns.
Once more, you've given us some out-of-the-box insights as far as commercial property is concerned, which perhaps helps to explain your success as a marketer. Anyway, Chris, I'm sure our listeners have found it rather helpful. So thank you once again.
It's always a pleasure.